Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cavaliers are currently getting their butts kicked by the Washington Wizards, so we figured we'd record a little bit early today. I'm with my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. I think what you meant to say was, since our listeners will be listening, by Thursday, I think what you meant to say is the Cavs just completed a furious fourth quarter comeback against the Washington Wizards. I'm doing well, though, and I'm excited to get into today's chat.
Absolutely. And we have a very special guest today. I'm excited. I know Carter is excited as well. We have Andrew Sharp from Sports Illustrated, as well as the fantastic Open Floor podcast. Andrew, how's it going?
What's going on, man? I am excited to be here as well. I've loved following you guys through the last couple years of Cavs madness. And I have to say, tonight was the first minute of Cavs basketball I've watched all season.
Congratulations.
And also thank you to you guys, okay, because this was the first time I've watched the Wizards in about 3 weeks. To prepare for this podcast, I said, okay, I'm gonna sit through Cavs Wizards and give this Wizards team another shot. And credit to the Cavs, they somehow made the Wizards look like a real NBA basketball team tonight, so I'm feeling good.
Honestly, yes. I joked about this with you before we jumped on, but opposing teams should really charge a markup when the Cavs come into town, because you are going to see the best version of your team on a night-to-night basis. Like, this is the one night a year in this year that Washington is going to look as good as they think they are.
Yeah, see, it's funny because I used to say that about any point guard that John Wall was guarding. And that's been true too. But tonight,
Colin Sexton's going for a career high as we speak.
Is he really?
Yeah. Oh, I don't think if he's hit 20, I don't remember it.
That's amazing.
But in fairness, perfect. I think we both have pretty selective memory. We're just repressing every Cavs game at this point. Like, if you asked me about like how they played 3 games ago, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Yeah. Until I went through a couple months of therapy.
It's definitely the healthiest approach at this point. I mean, I love Rodney Hood more than almost anybody, but when every game is the Rodney Hood game, you're kind of
Well, that makes
trouble.
One of us three on this pod.
Exactly. I don't blame you, okay? He's tough to love at this point in his career.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking because in reality, he's probably the most talented Cavs guard. From like
Jesus
a pure talent standpoint, yes. In related news, we're about to be 2-12. But yeah, the consistency is just not there for that poor guy.
You know, the funniest part about watching this game tonight, I was writing during it, so I really wasn't paying much attention to it. And I had kind of zoned out, and then the Wizards announcer comes back from commercial break and says, Cavaliers on a little bit of a run here. They've cut the lead to 17. And I was just like,
hell yeah.
Are you serious? Oh, boy.
This is all just because Jetty Osman was limited in minutes, though. That's what this really came down.
It's fine.
You know, trust in Jetty. He's gonna deliver you guys.
He's going to deliver us.
Deliver us, RJ Barrett.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Andrew. I'm still not completely over that, by the way, because I like to listen to a lot of podcasts at work, and sometimes my work days can be a little tough. I don't want to go too far into detail, but I deal with a lot of like lower income customers and stuff like that, and try to help them out. And some of the stories I listen to are really sad. So I listen to podcasts to brighten my day. And then in the same podcast, you compared RJ Barrett to Tyreek Evans and shit all over the 2016 Cavs.
It was the meanest shit you could have said to us.
So, listen, man, I don't even remember doing that with RJ Barrett, but maybe I did. I'm curious, though. Is he the great Canadian hope here? Because I kind of like Jamal Murray's upside a little bit more than him. I don't know. I don't trust RJ's jumper yet.
I really like RJ, and I like Jamal as well. Like, I think Jamal and RJ have both kind of had great moments for the Canadian national team. Yeah. RJ is definitely the great Canadian hope at this point, though. Like, he's Canadian basketball royalty. His dad was very involved with Team Canada. His Godfather Steve Nash. Like, it's, he's kind of the anointed chosen one, especially after the false start with Andrew Wiggins.
I was going to say, we're shifting everything we once said about Andrew Wiggins to RJ Barrett.
I've just been calling RJ Barrett Andrew Wiggins that likes basketball. That's been my running bet.
You know, and that's a solid improvement.
That's a pretty good player, actually, probably.
Yeah.
I thought we were about to hit three podcasts in a row where Justin talked about having a boner talking about Canadian prospects. So this is actually pretty good.
We're early in the podcast.
I'm glad we classed it up for Andrew.
Yeah, there we go.
The night is young.
I believe he said he was cutting diamonds on Monday night.
Canada's had a good couple of years, you know. I don't blame you.
Yeah, you would think they wouldn't have been able to survive the Wiggins debacle, but here they are. Trey Lyles.
So is RJ Barrett, is RJ Barrett the guy you guys want? Is that what's getting you through these cold winter nights?
Yeah, like I pretty much would like any of the top four. Like I really like Nazir Little too. I think Cam Reddish might actually have the highest ceiling, but he's kind of got the questions on whether or not he loves basketball.
Yeah, he's got a little Wiggins to him.
Zion is so much fun, but especially with the Cavs history, and I don't know if you do this,
but do you trust the Cavs to be the ones to maximize a weird player like Zion? I certainly don't.
Right, and is his body going to hold up? Like, do you do that at all with the Wizards when you look at a prospect and you're like, how bad is the worst case scenario? Because there's a good chance that's going to occur here.
Oh my God, yes. And it's so sad to hear fans of other teams talk about, like, Celtics fans can draft Jaylen Brown and trust that you're going to get like the best possible version of Jaylen Brown. Whereas like if Jaylen,
someone who takes more shot attempts than all their other better players, is that the best version of Jaylen Brown?
Jaylen definitely came back feeling himself this year.
Sorry, I interrupted you because I wanted to get that joke off. Continue.
No, it's all good. I understand. I'm just saying he definitely would have been Kelly Oubre had he gone to the Wizards. And it really sucks knowing that and just having to operate with that as a baseline anytime you think about the draft. But I'm glad to hear – pretty much everyone on the internet loves Zion Williamson. I love him too, at like right now, but I'm not 100% sold on him coming into the NBA and continuing to do what he's doing to these like random teams in college basketball. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to hear that there are some other people who are at least like cautious here.
Yeah, I think we both have anxiety about his body holding up at that weight. Like that's a lot of stress you're putting on your knees on a night-to-night basis. And then also, like even the better college players he's going up against are almost all going to end up being enterprise rent-a-car salesmen. Like, that's not the same as, like, playing small ball five and going up against Joel Embiid or someone like that. Or, you know, or a wing that's got some girth and some length that can keep up with them. It's, like, it's still just a little too easy for him, I feel.
100%. And even in the game he played against Kentucky, I was watching and I was like, most of these Kentucky guys look like they suck. And so I don't really know what to make of this. I mean, it's going to be really fun watching him just tear through college basketball, but then like all bets are off. I'm not one of the people who are like, oh, of course you draft Zion Williamson number one. Like it's
gonna I think that's just people getting excited. Like, and whatever, it's fine. I like him. I think he's going to be a good player, but I just think Barrett just makes sense right away in your head as an NBA player in a way that Zion doesn't. And there's a lot of teams that can ruin Zion in a way that I think Barrett's going to be kind of – his floor is just so high.
That's the thing. His floor is – first of all, he's really fun to watch because he's not, like, crazy athletic, but he has, like, enough shake to his game where he can kind of just, like – weave through traffic, and watching him do that is a lot of fun. And like he's guaranteed to be all-star level, I think. The question is whether he can like shoot well enough to carry a team. But
well, the good thing is he's working with Drew Hanlon, and that has never
God knows that.
You know,
yikes!
I feel bad for Drew Hanlon because I remember when I heard that he was working with Fultz, I was like, man, like that could be a career-making assignment, or it could go pretty badly.
And, this dude was almost Chip England.
Yeah, and, exactly.
So wing and a miss.
Yeah, his life is still probably pretty great. God only knows what he's charging, like, Bradley Beal to work out for an entire summer. So he's probably doing fine regardless. But the Fultz thing did not end well.
Yeah, not great, Bob. I am interested in this Wizards team because Justin will tell you, I had this cockamamie theory going into the year that they had just acquired so many toxic players that it actually wasn't going to matter. Like, they had, like, yeah, some, like, toxicity nirvana. And and we kind of came to the conclusion that I wasn't wrong. It's just they hadn't hit it yet. And yeah, that it's going to be Melo that gets us there. Does, like, a dark part of your brain want them to add Melo?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Look, if we have to deal with this shit in DC, I at least want to take this to, like, its logical extreme. So I would like them to bring in Melo, potentially sign, like, a washed up Boogie next summer. Like, as long as John Wall is here, the ceiling is going to be pretty low, and or at least this version of John.
Incidentally,
Wall.
The floor also will be low.
Yeah, the floor is lower than I could have imagined. The loss of the Magic the other night really caught me off guard.
It's worth wondering which fan base is having a worse year between the Cavs and the Wizards.
It's funny to think about that because I was thinking about it watching the first quarter tonight, and I was like, you know, if the Cavs lose this game, it doesn't really matter to them because you guys came into the year knowing that it was going to be a total mess. Mm-hmm. There were enough people in Washington who still cared about the Wizards that watching them just completely self-combust here is really it hurts. And I don't know whether I put myself in that category. I think there's a small part of me who did actually think that they were going to finish in, like, the top half of the East. But
I thought they were too, man. I really did.
Look, a lot of talent on paper. I'm not sure what's happened, but, you know.
Hey, they're
how could we have known John Wall was going to gain 30 pounds?
Hey, after tonight, they're going to be over 500 with Dwight Howard. So he might have saved the day.
Makes you think.
Oh, my God. Dwight saving the day is pretty dark. And it is really funny with John Wall. It was like he recorded, like, a new workout video every week and also gained 30 pounds over the summer. So God only knows, like, what he was doing, but,
well, I think there's an implication that, like, with those workout videos, most of the time there's the idea of, like, oh, well, if they're showing this, they must be working out all the time. Turns out those 12 seconds on Instagram, that was it.
Totally. I think it's like when I have one day at the gym, when I finally drag myself to the gym, I'm like, well, that justifies me going to McDonald's and just gorging for the rest of the day. Like, maybe that's what John Wall did. He posted.
Yeah, I treat my body a lot worse after I go to the gym than exactly. I do. It's a net loss for me too. So I really sympathize with John Wall. You're right, Justin. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's like the second I go for, like, a 20-minute run, I'm, like, off to the races for the next 4 or 5 days. So. Is what it is.
He earned it, you know?
She sure did, you know? Good for John.
I wonder if it was just that Team USA photo that actually, that if we'll look back on it as, like, oh, shit, we should have known something was amiss.
Yeah, well, for me, it's been a little validating because I've been in D.C. kind of, like, I remember texting Golliver in, early November of last year, watching the Wizards lose to the Phoenix Suns. And I was just, like, on media row, despondent, and texted Oliver, like, I'm pretty sure the Wizards are going to need to trade John Wall. And as we've kind of progressed over the next 12 months, I feel like I've been vindicated by reality. I heard from a lot of Wizards fans who were like, you're an idiot. Like, what's wrong with you? John Wall is the best thing that's happened to this team in 10 years. And now it's like, all right, a John Wall trade wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Especially if it's for your guy, Brandon Ingram.
You know, I'd say the words. I'm ready. And maybe we could send him to Cleveland too.
We're busy. We're swamped. We're right now. Couldn't possibly answer the phone.
Come on, let's jumpstart the rebuilding process.
The funny thing is, now that everyone agrees with you, he's got one of the most untradeable contracts in the league.
Yeah, you know.
Do you think it's his fault? Like, why is if you had to, like, do an autopsy of this Wizards team of, like, why they are such dog shit? Is it more on Wall than anyone else, or is it just a collective view?
Yeah, you know, I think part of it is on Wall, and it's tricky with him because I some of it is his own lack of kind of commitment, and I mean, he, like, jokes aside, he does go out a lot, and that tends to take years off of guys' careers. But the main thing with him is, as his athleticism has come down from 100% to like 85%, that really hurts his game. And I think a similar thing will probably happen with Russell Westbrook in the next year or two. And so when he's still going to dominate the ball, but be kind of 85% as good as he was, it affects everybody else. And Beal, I think, could be great in a different situation, but he's not a number one. And Otto is like more of a number four that's being paid like a number one. And so that's when you get into trouble. When you've got three stars who just aren't good enough, it starts to hurt.
Yeah, they kind of got a two, a three, and a four as their one, two, and three.
Exactly.
And because I don't think Beal's a secondary star in a really good team for the most part. Like, I think of him as
it,
like,
well, it depends. Like, in,
depending
in
on role
NBA, in the current NBA, probably not. Next year when Durant goes to New York and like the bar for what a contender has to be, maybe he could be a number two. But
I was
like,
gonna say the Warriors have skewed the way we think about any of this.
Yeah,
stuff.
Totally.
They're so impossible, but yeah.
That's why I'm so excited by all this drama, because him being rarely interesting actually can enable everything else to be interesting again.
Yeah.
Because like Jimmy and Kawhi trades, it was like, oh, that's like conceptually cool, but it doesn't matter.
For sure. It's so funny, like, because they are cool. Like, I like watching the current version of the Raptors. I'm excited to see what happens with the Sixers. Like, crazy boomer bust potential in Philly, but
currently losing to the Magic.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we'll wait and see on that. But it is funny to stop and think sometimes how much cooler all of this would be if Durant weren't in Golden State. Like, it would be crazy thinking about Kawhi with a real shot to go win a title. Whereas now it's just like, all right, like, let's see where he goes next summer.
Andrew, I know the Durant news is really fresh, but I couldn't help but think about the ramifications of him leaving and the two most likely destinations and how much it would impact your life. Have you realized that your options are either he goes to New York and then all of a sudden Gulliver's one kind of golden team in the Western Conference has fallen down, and you can make the argument that the East is strong, or KD might go to the Lakers with LeBron and then he's just, you're never going to hear the end of it.
Yeah, I have actually thought about how insufferable KD and LeBron on the Lakers would be for me personally. Like, Open Floor would just become a Lakers podcast. We're almost there already. So yes, I've considered it. Whereas the Knicks, Kevin Durant's from DC, and I really have always loved him. The last couple years, that's gotten kind of complicated, but like, I don't want him to go to the Knicks. For his sake, I think, to me, I'm not sure whether there's any better option than staying in Golden State and forcing Draymond out. But literally anywhere but New York is what I'm hoping for. Because if he went to New York, I'm almost positive that within 2 months he'd have like a stress fracture in his foot. And
that'd be if he went to Philly.
Yeah, that's true. Philly is another mortal lock.
A graveyard.
Career-altering injury.
I was just thinking, especially because New York might get a top pick in the draft. And, like, if they signed Durant, Kyrie, and, like, drafted Zion, and all of a sudden all of those guys just have their worst-case scenarios with injuries, that would possibly be the most depressing team of all time.
Yeah, I mean, the Knicks, we could get a Knicks fan in on this podcast with the Wizards and the Cavs, because, like, on the one hand, they've had terrible ownership, which is also true in D.C. and less so in Cleveland, but, you know, it's part of it.
Come on. It's terrible. You know it's terrible.
So I think that's part of it, but there's also just been a history of, like, snake-bitten teams and players, and that's the factor. Like, everyone's like, oh, Dolan ruins everything, but, like, there have also just been cosmic forces at play with the Knicks over the years where you're like, I don't know why these people are so miserable, but something, I don't know who they offended in a past life, but Knicks fans are just screwed regardless.
It's just Dolan, man. It's not, like, it's not like they're getting these guys in the prime of their career. That's, they're all broken.
That's a great point. That's
they're all broke. Like Penny Hardaway, broken. Amare, broken.
Yeah, Antonio McDice even, you know?
Yeah, like all of these guys come and the second, like I get, like Porzingis is really the only one where you can be like, oh, well, I guess that's a bummer. But he's also 7'2". Like yeah. Those guys get hurt. Like, I don't know. Bad owners are just the thing you can't fix. And
it's tough.
And yeah. Both things are, yeah, that's just kind of where they are. I am interested, and I wanted to talk about this with all three of us because something I've kind of been harping on all day about this Durant situation is I do find it interesting because we're in the player empowerment era of do what you want. Who gives a shit? Like, don't worry about anyone else. Get yours. Don't worry about, you know, what your owner thinks or what fan bases think. Do what's right for you. And I think that's a good thing. But yeah. I think we're for the first time, we're seeing a team that's empowered enough to have their teammates be like, wait a minute, don't fucking do that. Like, don't, you can't like jerk us around. And I think that's a really interesting, like next step where we can actually take this nuance out of what could be done and what should be done.
Yeah. You know, I think that is a really good point. I wrote something along those lines just now, actually. Because I was thinking about it earlier today and was thinking back to something Ron Adams said during the finals. And he was talking to like me and a couple other people. And I was asking him about Draymond, and he was talking about how difficult it is for their coaches to strike a balance between kind of curtailing a player's bad habits. And he talked about Steph too, and then kind of letting them be them. And Golden State does a lot of empowerment with their players, and Draymond has had free reign to be Draymond. And that's part of what fascinates me about all this is like, Draymond's not really wrong. And so I don't even think he thought he was like crossing a line. I think he would probably admit that he shouldn't have repeatedly called Kevin Durant a bitch. But I think some of this comes back to the way that team is set up, where like the players themselves set the culture. And yeah, like you said, like some of their agendas are conflicting right now. And I think so that like, that's basically what I'm writing about for tomorrow. But what your broader point there is, I think, a really good one, where player empowerment is a good thing. But I think we kind of lose a lot of the nuance on Twitter when we talk about it, because even Durant's initial move, it was good. Like that week, there were probably 500 think pieces being like, Kevin Durant is an adult and he can do whatever he wants. And it's like, he can, but he's also an athlete, and fans can feel however they want. And it's not necessarily good for the league. And it's
nihilist as hell is what it is.
Exactly. And it's not like a strike against him or a strike against his character to say that this isn't necessarily the ideal outcome for him or for the NBA.
And yeah, like we all get he can do what he wants. Like anyone worth talking to has gotten there at this point.
Exactly.
Like we don't have to keep bragging that we know that a player is allowed to do what they want.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting about, and people are beginning to sort of understand this now, like we're talking about it, but over the course of the Twitter era, the conversation was distorted along the way because it became really easy to just write columns like answering the dumbest 15% of Twitter trolls. Mm-hmm. And it became like this whole genre of online writing that just got so obnoxious and insufferable. And we're finally coming out of it now. But yeah, it's the stuff like the player empowerment. Like I know Jimmy Butler can do whatever he wants. That doesn't mean that he isn't also acting like kind of a shithead.
No, it's very obvious to me. It's like, I don't know if either of you watched The Good Place, but like one of the main themes of that show is like what we owe to each other, you know? And it's like, yeah, Kevin Durant can like drag things out on a string and keep doing one plus ones, but he's messing with his teammates' money. Like,
yeah.
He's messing with stuff that it's more complicated than he can do what he wants. And like, I think that's the next step where we kind of start figuring out, you know, what the difference between the balance that you have to strike between being a good dude and, you know, taking care of yourself.
Yeah. And also I would say for people who talk about this stuff, like there's a balance between showing that you're a good person with empathy and the capacity to understand that like other people have different motivations, and also being critical of like the way things work and the way like the implications that some of these decisions have. And the Durant stuff, so part of that is interesting to me because you guys lived through this in Cleveland too, where LeBron kind of did this over and over again. And so I think that's one of the threads of this that I haven't seen anybody necessarily like write a great column on it yet. But I mean, the one-on-ones are pretty tough on the people around you. And I think we saw that in Cleveland and we're seeing it now.
I'm really fascinated to see how this plays out too, because Golden State has the organization has taken a lot of pride in being light years and just all their decision making. But there's also been some like close calls along the way. Like they went really hard for Dwight Howard. That didn't work out. He went to Houston and then they signed Iguodala. They obviously tried to trade for Kevin Love, which wouldn't have helped them kind of become what they were in terms of the style of play and the way that they've changed the game. I'm interested to see like how they manage this situation, because are you going to cater to Kevin Durant because he's a top 2-3 player in the world? But Draymond Green is a guy that, and Ethan Strauss talked about this too, that they want, there's a sense that they want to pick Durant over Draymond because they just don't want to give Draymond $200 million on his next contract. But at the same time, even if you cater to Durant, there's still no guarantee. If he's already out the door, that puts them in a tough situation. So the pressure of the one-on-one and just managing these personalities, I think it's going to be our first real opportunity to see how light years they really are when things aren't just all breaking their way.
Yeah.
Dude, Justin, I couldn't agree more, because this is like one of my favorite things that happened in the post-LeBron era for Miami. Or the near departure of Miami, because everyone, you know, loves shitting on Cavs culture and Dan Gilbert, rightfully so, because it's not a very well-run organization. But, yes. You know, they give all this credit to Miami, like, oh, they're the adults in the room. But when push came to shove, Pat Riley says, I drafted Shabazz Napier for you, LeBron. Will that help? Mm-hmm. And the Warriors now have said, hey, Kevin, we suspended Draymond for you. Will that keep you around? Like, everyone's thirsty in the end, is my point.
Well, so here's the thing. I think the point about their light years culture is a really good one, because like that's one thing where no one has written the definitive book yet, but I would love to hear, you know, what the internal dialogue was around the Kevin Love deal and even around the Dwight Howard situation, because there were like four or five like points along the way, even with starting Draymond versus David Lee, like where it was a razor thin difference between the perfect decision and a complete shit show.
Yeah.
And you know, you're never going to convince me that that was all just brilliance and foresight. I think they are really smart and super aggressive, but like a ton of this has been luck. The thing with KD though, is I don't know if there's much of a downside to recruiting him and going all out, because you know that I can't imagine there are going to be other teams that are going to want to pay Draymond $170 million or whatever he would get. And so I think at the end of the day, if they don't get KD, they can still go back to Draymond in mid-July and say, all right, let's talk about an extension. You're a Warrior for life. And I mean, maybe Draymond would be too pissed off at that point, but
right.
I can't see that happening.
What if catering to Durant means like looking into trading Draymond, because he's already taken one discount for the franchise. Like what he's been able to do, like I know everyone likes to make fun of some aspects of Draymond's game, but really, like, he's 6'4", 6'5". He can cover every single position. Like, he's one of the most versatile defenders I've ever seen. But yeah, given his stature and just the way that he's already aging and the way his body's breaking down, I think it's reasonable to question, like, even if it isn't, like, the full max, if you're offering, like, a real large portion of your salary cap to him, what's the other side of 30 going to look like? And if Durant basically gives you it's me or him ultimatum and no real guarantee that he's going to sign long term, that puts them in a tough situation.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that's part of what I'm wondering about here is, like, you know, maybe this gives them cover to make a move that they wanted to make anyways, because
right,
Joe Jacob, again, does kind of think of himself as this cutthroat, like, we're not just going to win four titles, we're going to win the next 10. And at some point that's going to mean kind of cashing things in to try and extend the run. And so that is certainly something that's in play, but it's also, I would be shocked if Bob Myers would ever pull the trigger on that without, like, having some sketchy conversation with Rich Kleiman where he gets, like, a guarantee that KD is going to be there for the long term.
Worst case scenario is they lose both. And even if they trade Draymond, they're probably not going to get equivalent value back. And yeah, it just doesn't feel like a thing they're going to pull the trigger on. Like, they're going to win the title this year.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
They very well might not win the title if they trade Draymond for spare pieces. They probably will.
Yes, and that's also, like, I wrote about trading Draymond in August and said I like, my prediction was that Durant would stay in Golden State and they would trade Draymond to kind of, like, make him happy and give him a new story and save money. And then the best counterpoint I heard to that was, like, look, they're going to go win a title and you don't break up a title team. There's no way they would trade someone after winning another title. Which I could see. In other words, like, the only way they would trade him is if Durant goes to Bob Myers and Lacob and says, you need to trade this dude, otherwise I'm out. And if you trade him, I'm in.
What, yeah, I find so bad. The second clause of that sentence is really important too.
Yeah.
He has to completely commit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sure, the Cavs suck, but there's one way to make this team tolerable, and that's when you have some skin in the game with my bookie.
Yeah, I just picture Frank Reynolds from Always Sunny just yelling, gambling. There's so much to bet on: college basketball, football, NBA, NHL, just about anything you want. We recommend these guys from MyBookie because we really trust them. MyBookie has been in business for years. They've got great online reviews, and their mobile site's easy to use.
Sign up this week and MyBookie will give you a 50% deposit bonus to jumpstart your bankroll. It's a great way to bank even more money when you win.
Make sure to follow at BetMyBookie on Twitter. They personally respond to every mention and DM. Not to mention, they've given away more than $10,000 in free money to their followers this football season. You'll be the first to know as soon as new odds and props are posted.
And I'm sure they'll have a laugh if you mentioned that you wanted to bet with MyBookie when you heard us fumble over the library. So don't miss out on one of the best weeks to bet on sports this year. Log on to MyBookie right now and use promo code BLUEWIRE to get that 50% deposit bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. You play, you win, you get paid. The thing I find fascinating about this is, like, the impact Steph Curry had on the game is obviously really emphasizing this pace and space. Guys are pulling up from way deeper. But the biggest impact LeBron has had on the game is really this player empowerment. And in a funny way, him going to Miami almost kind of doomed him in Cleveland, because that helped enable Kevin Durant to go to the Warriors and make that unpopular move. And in the same way, LeBron's move to the Lakers might actually end up kind of laying the groundwork for Durant to leave the Warriors, because if Durant does in fact go to the Knicks, where it's not a well-run organization, there's obviously a million question marks there. instead of a winning situation, it could be very similar to LeBron going to the Lakers over teams like Houston or Philadelphia, where he might have had more of a chance of winning. Obviously, leaving the Cavs is very different than leaving this Warriors team. But I'm just,
I don't see the difference.
Leaving a well-oiled machine with Teddy and Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah. The Kyrie situation pretty much doomed whatever was going on in Cleveland, but it would be like LeBron going.
There's another example, by the way, of another all-star saying, listen, I'm not here to let you play out your free agency dream. Like Kyrie saw the writing on the wall too. And was like, yeah, I'm not playing that game. I'm not one of your flunkies. I'm not James Jones who's just going to deal with this.
Totally. Yeah. I definitely hear what you're saying because what happened with LeBron was so ironic because he basically reinvented the way we follow the sport and the way like players kind of take ownership of their careers. And then Durant just beat him at his own game. Right. And it's true that I hadn't thought about Durant's potential move in that context, but it is true that like going to the Knicks would be a very similar move to going to the Lakers. And again, that's why it's depressing. Like be a little bit original, KD. Come on, man.
It's funny because he mirrors LeBron in so many ways, except in self-assuredness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause like, that's tough. That's why I think all this has remained so messy is that just still, and the guys on Light Years were talking about it in their podcast that they recorded last night is like, he just doesn't know what he wants. And like, it's really hard to build a plan around a guy that seemingly wanted to be there, but then seems to be flirting with leaving. And, you know, he wins a title and says, it wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. And like, this guy is just chasing the dragon. It's just not happening, man.
You know, man, it would have been good had you not joined a 73-win team. I think Durant's first title could have been awesome. I mean, how often?
I think that's one of the all-time problematic quotes that nobody like latched onto except me. What? Like, I was like, well, he was just like, it just was fine.
Totally. Yeah, man, it's tough. And I don't even know, like, I would lose my mind if I were a Cavs fan because those finals runs could have been so cool. Like, some of the greatest series in NBA history the last couple of years.
Yeah, we got robbed of the best rivalry in NBA history.
We absolutely did. And it's total bullshit. And we should at least be able to talk about it. And I think that's still a little, like, too radioactive to talk about. Like the pall that KD has cast over the NBA for the last couple of years, but it bums me out whenever I remember it.
To me, yeah, it's weird too because like I think this is my hot take, and I don't think Carter completely agrees with me, but I think out of the 3 years of Kyrie and LeBron, the worst team that they had was the one that won the title. Like I think if both teams were completely healthy, there's no suspensions or anything like that, the Cavs would win in 2015 and the Warriors would win in 2016. And then that 2017 team, they were obviously terrible defensively through a lot of the year, but they did kind of turn things around. They had a lot of depth, and that offense was just one of the best offenses that we've seen. And yeah. To me, like it's still like the missed Kyle Korver three really kills me, but at the same time, part of me thinks, okay, well, they still had Durant. The Warriors still had another
gear.
Yeah,
you guys are still totally
screwed. Like, it's so much like the Houston series last year that even though Houston was up, it never felt like the Warriors really got out of, like, second gear.
Yes.
Yeah, it was hard to worry about them when I was like, I don't even think they're trying.
No, that's the most disrespectful thing. Like game 6 and 7, they were down at halftime. They didn't try until the second half of both of those games. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's definitely shocking where, you know, there are people who will look back and be like, wow, like the Rockets really gave them a run. It's like, no, the weirdest part of the whole thing was that series was never close.
Yeah. That's something we've been talking about at work recently about like just how we completely retrofit the competitiveness of playoff series based on how many games they went.
Yeah.
As opposed to how competitive, like we were specifically talking about the Thunder Heat finals, which it was Heat in five, but like four super close games.
Oh my God. And I mean, you guys probably were rooting pretty hard against LeBron in that series, but like,
I was team Cavs for Mavs the year before.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and I was so excited. Like, first of all, I did not like LeBron at that point in his career. And I also loved KD and Russ and Harden. And so I was like living and dying with each of those games. And it's true. They each came down to the final 2 minutes, and it was an awesome series that ultimately kind of like history.
Yeah, history won't know it was a competitive series.
Yeah, it was great. No. And so it was like, by the way, Heat Bulls, I think, was another five game series that was actually like pretty close. It was, I think, the year before, but.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, though. I never felt like the Rockets were going to win that series. It wasn't like I remember the 2016 Thunder, the one they blew the 3-1. I was like, oh, Warriors are cooked.
Yes.
And that was miraculous. And same with the Cavs. But, like,
And the Warriors were cooked. That's another one where it's like, you know, Klay Thompson really pulled that quarter out of his ass, and it's amazing. Yeah,
That's kind of, I remember the anti-Warriors sentiment that I've always like clung to was a Zach Lowe piece. He mentioned something like, people do love to see greatness, but they love to see it tested. And even down 3-2, they weren't tested. No one had to be amazing.
Wait, tested what, in the Rocket series?
Yeah, like they weren't tested in the Rocket series. They were very tested in the Thunder series, and that's what made it amazing.
And it was awesome. They humiliated Russ. It was crazy.
That Klay Thompson game is still one of the craziest games I've ever seen. And like, as much as it pains me, like part of me does like some of these Warriors, especially after all the years of going back and forth, you just kind of, you learn to have some respect for them. And my favorite Klay Thompson story now, I just heard it today on Ethan's pod, just kind of reacting to all this Durant news. But apparently, and I had no idea about this, apparently when the Warriors cut Vergeau, Klay Thompson went into like a weeks long depression because, and they didn't realize it at the time, that was apparently his best friend on the team, that he would go out to dinner with Vergeau every time they were on the road. Like those two just hung out all the time.
That would be an awesome off-season piece, because I bet that that is true for like a number of people throughout the NBA, where Vergeau was like their favorite person, because from what I've heard of Vergeau, he is down to party like pretty much whenever, and was just like the most fun guy in every single locker room. And I think that's like LeBron had him around too for that purpose for a couple years there.
Yeah, I gotta say, I thought you were gonna say that sounds like a good buddy cop comedy.
He would work great in a buddy cop comedy. Probably not a good actual police officer, but.
Don't disrespect Andy like that. Klay is literally, by a lot of definitions, a criminal, just based on how much he's choking up.
Klay, my favorite part.
He'd be the bad cop.
My favorite part of this entire Warriors like kerfuffle the last few days is Klay somehow like speaking up in the middle of Durant and Draymond in like calling each other bitches and Klay bringing everyone together at the end of the Marcus Thompson piece. That was awesome.
Come on, guys, let's just chill, you know? It's fine.
Yeah, we all want to win, you know?
Poor Klay, just miscast. They needed their savior Steph to bring things back together.
That's that's the one factor that I'm most interested in going forward, is like how Steph handles any of this, because he's not like a naturally vocal leader, I'd say. But if things continue on the current trajectory, like it's going to be pretty awkward if Steph doesn't like come out and say something.
Yeah, he kind of has to be the bridge there. Like no one else can really do it. Kerr can't do it. And in fairness, like the front office and coaching staff has just such a different incentive structure than the players on the roster. Like the coaches and front office are incentivized just to take Durant's side.
Yeah, and that's also going to be really kind of interesting, because it seems like most of the players are on Draymond's side. And
yeah, like maybe not the message, not the delivery, but the message
Yeah.
might have resonated.
It's pretty crazy.
Before we go, something Justin and I both want to talk to you about, because we both love Open Floor. Like, I would say that's like become my favorite go-to national NBA pod.
Mm-hmm. It gets referenced and your points get stolen a lot on here.
Oh yeah. A lot of like Open Floor echoing going on.
I really appreciate it. You know, I never expected to have as much fun with Ben as we have, but
that's exactly the question I was about to ask actually. Ben has a vibe. Ben has an interesting, unique vibe. He kind of has that like almost like snobbish, like he definitely knows he's smart. And I was wondering, when did you realize that Ben was hilarious?
You know, it was early on, actually. There were a couple things early on. I tried to talk to him at some game. It was at the All-Star game in Toronto, I believe. And I had never met Ben before. And I just started working at Sports Illustrated like 2 or 3 weeks before. And I sat down next to him and was like, hey, like they were thinking about putting us on a podcast together. Like, how you doing? And Ben was just sitting there. At this point, he was addicted to Red Bull at one point. So he's sitting there with this fucking 12-ounce Red Bull, just like pounding out some story, like a preview for the dunk contest, and like barely acknowledged me. And I was like, okay, like that's going to be a weird podcast. Because I was also, I just hosted a podcast with like Chris Ryan and Juliet Littman at
Good Talkers.
Yeah, great talkers, like always down to kind of shoot the shit with whatever. And Ben's just all business from day one. So I was a little wary going in. But the first podcast we did together, there was like a lull in the conversation. And then somehow we started making fun of Phoenix and Oklahoma City. And just kind of like the best part about Golliver is that he's a little bit too mean.
Yes, 100% he's too mean.
Yeah, and so he got a little bit too mean with those cities. And I remember being like, okay, I can get behind that. Like, if you're just going to be a dick, like, we can have some fun here. And so there's that came out. But there were definitely, like, the first month or so of recording Open Floor, I had friends who would listen and be like, how are you going to do a podcast with this guy? But eventually we had a good rapport.
Yeah, my first impression of him was horrible. It was actually one of the top 100 breakdowns.
Oh, boy.
And you were challenging some of the rankings. And he could not have been more dismissive. And I was just like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
I just stopped listening to the podcast. And then Justin mentioned it a few times. And I think Sam and Andy mentioned it a couple times. I'm like, all right, I'm going to give it another shot. And then, like, something just clicked into my brain. I was like, no, this guy's amazing. And like, totally. And like, you kind of almost like, it's funny because you like to joke, but like you almost get to play the straight man with him. Exactly. You like, you just tee him up.
Well, yes, that's the thing is like, he's such a weirdo by nature that I just sort of like play it straight and let Ben kind of take the wheel. And it works, you know. It is funny though, because people who don't listen to the podcast regularly will listen and be like, Ben Golliver sounds like a total asshole.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, those guys are talking about my team today. This
totally. Totally. And you have to check, like, there's a dynamic that it's like, once you realize that we're actually friends, it all sort of works.
No, Justin, we were talking about your last pod before this earlier today, and Justin's direct quote was, Andrew was incredulous for like half of it.
Yeah, I really was. At one point we were talking about Kyrie Irving, and I don't know what got into Ben, but he was so negative about Kyrie in Boston when like half that team sucks right now. And
it was outrageous. I listened to it as well.
I was just like, what are you talking about? Where really, like, Hayward is not good anymore, and no. Horford is just old. And those are the Celtics' issues. It's not Kyrie.
And
it's
also, funny. Brad Stevens needs to, like, we don't know how he handles a team with a lot of talent. Like, I think there's going to be an adjustment period there, because we know that he can do the whole scrappy underdog thing. But
well, Ben doesn't want to hear any of that shit.
Facilitate, Kyrie.
I just love it because, like, nobody is more confident in a take than Ben. And like, he could argue the most outrageous thing and be so confident that like, there have been times where I've heard you just be like, What?
Totally.
Because, like, he's so confident, you almost, like, can't handle it.
Yes. It's also difficult because I'm kind of like, I don't really give a shit. And so
He drives you to give a shit, though.
Yeah. Every now and then he'll stake out a position so extreme that I am forced to, like, wake up and drink a cup of coffee and be like, no, you're an idiot. So that propels us through the dark winter months. I think that's happened with Kevin Durant like 5 different times.
Well, wow. He's the best.
Yeah.
Well, you're great too, but
yeah. No, look, Golliver is a legend in his own right. Yeah.
And on Instagram.
Yes. And he's even kept it going post Red Bull, which I'm really proud of him for.
By the way, no greater flex on Twitter.com than Golliver's Manuel Ortiz.
Totally. It's the greatest endorsement you can get from anybody.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun. We really appreciate you coming on. To our listeners, if you're not already listening to Open Floor, make sure you do that. You can also read Andrew at Sports Illustrated. So thanks again, man. And to our listeners, if you want to support our show, make sure to leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook those books. And if you want to be part of our Discord chat, if you leave a review on iTunes, take a little screenshot of that, email it to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'll be more than happy to send a link. So until next time, go Cavs.
All right. Cook those books.